हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
चैतन्य चरितमृत चैप्टर 7 Lord Chaitanya and Five Teachers, page 70. Srila Prabhupada. It is to be understood that when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted and danced, he did so by the influence of the pleasure potency of the spiritual world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never considered the holy name of the Lord to be a material vibration, nor does any pure devotee mistake the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra to be a material musical manifestation. Lord Chaitanya never tried to be the master of the holy name. Rather, he taught us how to be servants of the holy name. One chants the holy name of the Lord just to make a show, not knowing the secret of success. He may increase his bile secretion, but he will never attain perfection in chanting the holy name. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented himself in this way. I am a great fool and do not have knowledge of right and wrong. Right, so you see these two things. He's a great fool and doesn't have knowledge of right and wrong. As we were reading in the morning in the Nectar Devotion, in Krishna's qualities, you know, is that being highly learned means that you have knowledge of the scriptures, and you know how to properly apply that. Mm-hmm. So then, by saying this here, he's does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's not just an arbitrary. You know. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Compared to the ocean of transcendental bliss that one tastes by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the pleasure derived from a personal Brahman realization, Brahmananda, is like the shallow water in a canal. Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.138, it is stated, if Brahmananda, the transcendental bliss derived from understanding a personal Brahman, were multiplied a million times, such a quantity of Brahmananda could not compare with even an atomic portion of the pleasure relished in pure devotional service. So the point being, there's no comparison. Mm-hmm. You know, to say so, it's just like a drop compared to the ocean, that's just to give you an idea, you can't compare it. But even that is not actually a proper comparison. Because here it's saying a million times, it still just would not be, you know, even an atomic portion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concluded, my dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, since I have directly seen you in my transcendental bliss has taken the shape of a great ocean. Being situated in that ocean, I now realize all other so-called happiness to be like the water contained in the hoof print of a calf. Footnote 24. This is the verse from the Hari Bhakti Shirodaya 1436. After hearing Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the Mayavadi sannyasis were moved. Their minds changed, and thus they spoke with pleasing words. Srila Prabhupada. The original purpose of the Mayavadi sannyasis of Banaras in meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to defeat his personal conception of God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, as a preacher, turned the minds of the Mayavadi sannyasis. They were melted by the sweet words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and thus became friendly and spoke to him also in sweet words. Similarly, all preachers will have to meet opponents, but they should not make them more inimical. They are already enemies, and if we talk with them harshly or impolitely, their enmity will merely increase. We should therefore follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as far as possible and try to convince the opposition by quoting from the Shastras and presenting the conclusion of the Acharyas. In this way, we should try to defeat all the enemies of the Lord. So there's the culture kind of presentation like that. Doesn't mean you're not saying. Lord Chaitanya, see, he was very direct in what he was saying. He just uses pleasing words, very nice things. You understand the context that the people you're talking to will appreciate. That kind of thing. Showing etiquette and other things like that. Because otherwise somebody's talking strongly, you can yell. And you can do those kind of things, but it won't necessarily make it any better. The Mayavadi Sannyasi said, "Dear Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what you have said is all true. Only one who is favored by fortune attains love of Godhead. Dear sir, there is no objection to your being a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Everyone is satisfied with this. But why do you avoid discussion on the Vedanta Sutra? What is the fault in it?" Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments in this connection. Quote, "Mayavadi sannyasis accept that the commentary by Sri Shankaracharya known as Sharirika Basi gives the real meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. In other words, Mayavadi sannyasis accept the meanings expressed in the explanations of the Vedanta Sutra by Shankaracharya, which are based on monism. Thus they explain the Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, and all such Vedic literatures in their own impersonal way." Right, so that's the point of your hermeneutics. You're going to, you know, as we saw, you can take it, the first step is a karma gyan. Right? So they picked karma gyan. And then within karma gyan, I mean, within the gyan, then you have the different schools. So within that, they've chosen Vedanta. And then within that, monistic Vedanta. And so that, then in their hermeneutics, they'll always perceive things from that angle. Like that. They won't see from another angle. The great Mayavadi sannyasi Sarananda Yogindra has written a book known as Vedanta Sar, in which he writes, "Vedanto nama Upanishat pramanam tad upakarini sharidaka sutradini cha." Okay. According to Sarananda Yogindra, the Vedanta Sutra and Upanishads, as presented by Sri Shankaracharya in a Sharirika Bhashya commentary, are the only sources of Vedic evidence. Actually, however, Vedanta refers to the essence of Vedic knowledge, and it is not a fact that there is nothing more than Shankaracharya Sharirika Bhashya. Right, so he's saying that's the only sort of Vedic evidence. So he doesn't even accept really the other literatures and other things like the Veda itself or other things like that. It'll only be as how he's giving it. Right? But the problem is that you know, being the acharya, then fine. That what he's presenting is maybe, you know, how you say, the way to perceive. But unfortunately, since he's only revealing the monistic aspect, then it's not actually the only source. It's discussing on up to liberation. They have a good understanding, but the problem is at the point of liberation, that's where their philosophy falls short, because then they can't actually explain the position of the jiva and the Supreme Lord in that platform of liberation. They just say everything merges, but how that'll work, it's not logical how one drop becomes the ocean. Because otherwise, then if the drop becomes the ocean, so that means the previous ocean disappears, or now we have two oceans in the place of one. You know, so it doesn't really work very well. You know, their idea.
Maharaj, we study the school and the commentary of Vedanta Sutra, the Mayavadi.
That I'm not sure if they do. I know that all the Vaishnava Acharyas in their commentaries have always addressed Shankara's points.
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's not such a difficult thing, because he didn't comment on every verse in Vedanta Sutra. The Acharyas do. The Vaishnava Acharyas do, but Shankaracharya doesn't. He just picks those sutras that are going to be easy to interpret them according to the monistic thought.
Yes.
And then, like that, he encourages his followers to interpret in this way.
Yes.
And so even though he didn't write commentaries on all the verses, it makes it seem like he's just given an idea and you could do the rest of them that way. Problem is he didn't comment on them, because you actually can't.
Yes.
Yeah. But the point is he's there to bewilder the Buddhists, bring them back into the Vedic, you know, religion, and then from the Vedic religion, now you can show them the actual, you know, the Sad Dharma.
But it seems that the main occupation of the sannyasi is to study the Vedanta Sutra.
Yes. At least the Shankara sannyasi.
Yes.
Because that, as he said, that's the only thing they take as evidence.
Yes.
Like for us, then we have Bhagavatam as our main study, and then the literatures of the Acharyas that are bringing out the various points of Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So the point of studying and contemplating, and not being absorbed in the material environment, and contemplating on the supreme, that's the generic duties of a sannyasi.
Yes.
And so depending upon the particular line and what they're going to study, what they're going to contemplate, will differ. Like, you know, so for the Vaishnavas, they have a wider range, and the Gaudiya Vaishnavas have the widest range. Because no one has as much literature on the transcendental subject matter as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas.
Yes.
No one else has that many literatures.
So they study mainly the Vedanta, but Vedanta is not full commentary of Shankaracharya.
No, but it keeps them busy. You know, because they also know grammar and everything like that, so they know Panini grammar. And that will keep them quite busy, because it also leaves room for speculation, because it's just, they just have, it's very, as short as it can be. In the opening to the Harinamrita Vyakarana, Jiva Goswami makes the point that if in writing his Panini Sutras, that if Panini was able to find a way to, you know, grammatically shorten the sutra by even half a syllable, he would feel as happy as if he has just had his wife just gave birth to a son. Like that. So he liked to make it as short as possible. The problem is then you can't really understand what it is. You need the commentaries. So even though there's only 3,000 sutras in Sanskrit grammar, but because Panini has written them so short, then you need 7,000 verses of commentary just so you understand what he's talking about. Right? Well, then in Harinamrita Vyakarana, he's written in such a way that the grammatical point is clear and you can see the relationship with Krishna. Like that. So when they talk about the Panini Sutras, they talk about 10,000 shlokas. But it's not that the sutras themselves are 10,000. They're only three. It's just like one of them. One sutra, it's Ak. Means A-K. Or A-C-K, I think. That's it. What does that mean? You know? So that's the whole point. So that there needs to be commentaries to explain what Ak means. Well, that same point will be given by Jiva Goswami a little bit more elaborate, so it's more easy to understand. So, they keep themselves busy. Because you saw, we were going through Vedanta Sutra. Yeah. And we were going for some years. And we didn't get so far. Right? And it means we just... Where were we? In second?
2.4.
Yeah, 2.4. So, yeah. We, you know... Yeah. So, that's the thing. And then if you get into it and you study it and understand the grammatical points and go into all those things like that, it's here. So... When they say a 12-year course, just on Vedanta Sutra, it could go very comfortably. You know, so it's just, that's all they study. You know, I mean, even the Shris, it's the main thing is the Prabandhas, the Vedanta Sutra, and Pancharatra. That's their main study.
Prabandhas?
Sorry?
Prabandhas? The first one, what's that?
Prabandhas. The Divya Prabandhas, those are the prayers and songs of the 12 Olivars. I think there's 4,000 shlokas or something. Yeah? So it's there. So ours is Bhagavatam. That is our central work. And then everything connected with that. And so that's We're studying Bhagavatam, and because the Acharyas have given all these commentaries on Bhagavatam in the form, one is as commentaries on the verses, but also commentaries on the themes that are there. Like Brihad Bhagavatamrita is on that, the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, you know, Nectar of Devotion, you know, then based on that, and then there's commentaries on the commentaries, you know, like this, and so, in this way there's a huge, huge amount of literature. So we have plenty to, you know, and it's not as boring. You can see as when we were studying Vedanta Sutra just straight, it's quite dry. Right? But when we added in all the various points from Bhagavatam commentaries, because Bhagavatam is the natural commentary, so therefore the points that are made in Vedanta Sutra, they'll be covered in the Bhagavatam. So when you bring in the Bhagavatam explanation of those points, then it became much more understandable. So the other, maybe we would go through less literature, you know, less like, let's say, half a page or one page or like this. And it was, you know, it wasn't so easy to catch. But as soon as we added in all the Bhagavatam things, sometimes, you know, we would go through five pages, but then you'd understand it. So the volume was greater, but the understanding was also greater. So that's the thing, is keeping it just to that means they will remain bewildered. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Maharaj, these Mayavadi sannyasis, they so much follow Shankaracharya and appreciate his work on the Sharirika Bhashya and give importance to it. However, apart from Sharirika Bhashya, Shankaracharya has also written other works where he concludes, he gives a siddhanta that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one should worship him.
Yeah, so that's why they stick to Vedanta Sutra.
So they completely ignore that particular work.
Basically, they know it's there. Once we ask one Mayavadi, I think we were in Sringeri, and we weren't talking to the you know, because there you don't talk to the swamis, but we were talking to some of the pundits there, because mm-hmm. you know, Sringeri means, you know, not Sringeri, Kamakotipitam. So there we met with some of the pundits there, because they bring always the best, you know, in the sampradaya will come and teach the, you know, the acharyas. So then we brought up this point about that work about Radha and Krishna. I don't remember the name now. And they agreed. Shankaracharya wrote it. But he said, I have no idea why. To them it was just a total bewilderment. So it's like that, you know. So like in Guru Vayur. They take, you know, they take the deity out five times a day, and they chant, they go out on the Hari Nam. Like the evening one, it's 3 hours the deity's out. They're chanting Hare Krishna the whole time. Kirtan. You know. They sing Gita Govinda for the deities. All these things. So it's one of those things that no one understands why. So he's saying that this one commentator, then he just said that there is it, and that's all there is. And so if they stick to that, it makes it easier to be a monist, because if you read these other things, then you might get bewildered and actually think maybe, you know, to take up a devotional service. Do you remember the discussion this morning? Yes, so the discussion this morning is they're under certain modes, they want certain results, therefore that's why they'll act in that way. So that what they do is strange, that's not strange.
It's sad
for them, but it's sad for anybody who doesn't take up devotional service, any living entity, because they're supposed to be serving Krishna, then that they're not, then that's always sad. You know, so it's just the particular modes of nature that are.
Now, as it was said in the point before, that Chaitanya Prabhu was very friendly to the Mayavadi sannyasis.
Yeah, friendly means the culture. You deal nicely in the culture.
It's only Vaishnava etiquette, or it's more the inside. No,
the point is Vaishnava etiquette is there, and according to the people that you're dealing with, then you can be more. I say more relaxed or informal or not. It depends on who you're dealing with. The point is that it should get the effect. So the Lord Chaitanya is how he's dealing, that got the effect here. So if people are more formal, you might deal in that way, more informal. You just find what works. But the idea is that it's presented very, very pleasantly.
Mm-hmm.
So that
makes sense. And one of the qualities we studied in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu was that Krishna is a pleasing talker.
Yes, pleasing talker.
Prabhu would mention something
like that. Yes, yes. So pleasing talker. So he's like that. You know, he's fluent. You know, he always, whatever is said, he has something to say. He speaks always based on the Shastra, but at the same time, he knows how to apply it. And it's not just the technique, it's that devotional attitude.
Yes.
So that's what people will catch. And here, the Lord's speaking, so naturally then, you know. But they have to also have some sincerity. Otherwise, he also spoke to others and they didn't appreciate. Like the Buddhists, I think they didn't appreciate. Yes.
Can teachers of Sufism consider the highest life or goal of the life, of human life, is love to the God, but when you reach highest level of this love, your ego must be destroyed, and because of love, you should nurture yourself in God's existence. And is it the same motivation like Mayavadi has, or it's a lack of understanding what is the real love today?
It's a lack of understanding because you're going to have the aspect is that the ultimate aspect of the personal interaction, they don't understand transcendental. Because in here they're talking about God, but they're talking about God as the Supreme Lord, means he's the creator, maintainer, destroyer, all these things. They don't really know much about his loving exchanges with the devotees. Because when you say you have to give up the false ego, yes, you do. But that doesn't mean by giving up the false ego, there's not real ego. That's why it's called false ego. It means that there is a real ego. So like I say, it's a false diamond. It means because there's real ones. Right? So due to lack of knowledge, then they'll end up there. Right? There are other Vedanta commentaries written by Vaishnavacharyas, none of whom follow Sri Shankaracharya or accept the imaginative commentary of his school. Oh, okay. Too many mosquitoes. Oh, our what do you call it? Our smoke man's not here today.
You didn't sound like you didn't keep the lighter in the middle of the
He doesn't even go away. I'm pushing this guy, and he won't move. He's turning upside down. He just sits there. You know? I say, it's like you got a samosa. You're not letting go. It doesn't matter what. So, or accept the imaginative commentary of his school, because he's written, and then on top of that, you get the the commentaries given by his followers, right? Because within his what he speaks, you could still, if you dig, find the actual philosophy, but it won't be direct. It's quite hidden. But because they're into speculation, then his followers who comment on it, that's just pure nonsense. Like that. So, like he says, we don't deal with his commentary. You know, and especially the commentary of his followers. Okay, this must be the Vaishnavacharyas. Their commentaries are based on the philosophy of duality. What is it? Who's the there here?
The Vaishnavacharyas
is based from the
that
is Shankaracharya's
music. Yeah. Okay. Monistic philosophers like Shankaracharya and his followers want to establish that God and the living entity are one. And instead of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they present themselves as God. They want to be worshipped as God by others. Such persons do not accept the philosophies of the Vaishnava Acharyas, which are known as Shuddha Dvaita, purified monism, Shuddha Dvaita, purified dualism. Shuddha Dvaita, purified dualism, Vishishta Dvaita, specific monism, and Dvaita Dvaita, monism and dualism, and Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivable oneness and difference. Mayavadis do not discuss these philosophies, for they are firmly convinced of their own philosophy of Kevala Dvaita, exclusive monism. Right, so monism is there within in the philosophy, but exclusive, then that's not. Because the point is the monistic aspect is how Krishna is the source of everything. Everything's coming from him. So that way, him and his energies are non-different. But at the same time, there is still difference. He is a person that is separate from all this. And therefore, the living entities are also then individual. Accepting this system of philosophy as the pure understanding of Vedanta Sutra, they believe that Krishna has a body made of material elements, and that the activities of loving service to Krishna are sentimentality. Right? So they'll do that. Rationalists will also say it's sentimentality, things like this. They just very easily just write it off. Right? They're saying they're being rational, but you can't discuss these things. After hearing the Mayavadi sannyasi speak in that way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled slightly and said, "Dear sirs, if you don't mind, I can say something to you regarding Vedanta philosophy." Right, so he spoke first and all that, and then they were very appreciative, but they said, "But still, as a sannyasi, why aren't you studying Vedanta?" You know, because he said at first, the spiritual master said he's a fool. And so the main thing is chanting, not studying. Their point is studying Vedanta. That will bring them to the point of realization. But his guru is saying, no, it's by chanting that will bring you to there. Then the study, that will be a support for that. So now that they've accepted, now it says, okay, then I'll say something. You know. Srila Prabhupada. The Mayavadi sannyasis, appreciating Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, inquired from him why he did not discuss Vedanta philosophy. Actually, however, the entire system of Vaishnava activities is based on Vedanta philosophy. Vaishnavas do not neglect Vedanta, but they do not care to understand Vedanta on the basis of Sharirika Bhashya. Therefore, to clarify the situation, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with the permission of the Mayavadi sannyasis, wanted to speak regarding Vedanta philosophy. In other words, he's not going to study based on Shankaracharya. The Vaishnavas are by far the greatest philosophers in the world, and the greatest among them was Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu, whose philosophy was again presented less than 400 years later by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. Therefore, one must know very well that Vaishnava philosophers are not sentimentalists or cheap devotees like the Sahajiyas. Right, because they don't get into philosophy. Their thing is, oh, that's all gyan, we don't get into that. All the Vaishnava Acharyas were vastly learned scholars who understood Vedanta philosophy fully. For unless one knows Vedanta philosophy, one cannot be an Acharya. To be accepted as an Acharya among Indian transcendentalists who follow the Vedic principles, one must become a vastly learned scholar in Vedanta philosophy, either by studying it or hearing it. Yeah, so then they all know. So then Prabhupada's founder, he knows this vastly, these things. But his vastness of understanding is how to present it in a way, through logic, that those who don't know or accept the Vedas will appreciate. So that's a special uniqueness. Like that. And then he says, of all of them, then Jiva Goswami is the greatest. So Prabhupada, what he's saying is that, you know, in the world, he means that. He doesn't mean just within, you know, the Vedic scene or amongst the Gaudiyas or like that. He's meaning in the world. Bhakti develops the pursuance of Vedanta philosophy. This is described as Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12. The words Bhaktya Sutra Grihitaya and this verse are very important, for they indicate that bhakti must be based upon the philosophy of the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. Srila Rupa Goswami said, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.101, Shruti Shmiti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Tina Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatya Yaiva Kalpate. Right? So this is just for fun. This is, I say, the, you could say, the, call it? That would be, this would be epistemology, no? Or ontology. Epistemology. So this is epistemology 101. Mm. You know, when you go to university, they have the class 101. So we see here Bhakti Rasam Sita 12101. So this is on, you know, the epistemology of how we work. So he's put here. Devotional service performed without reference to the Vedas, Puranas, Pancharatras, etc. must be considered sentimentalism, and it causes nothing but disturbance to society. Right? So that's why we can't base it on anything else. Right? We can't base it on some other aspect. Okay, epistemology, because this is Praman. I was establishing it. So you can't base it on something else. You can't say, well, people say, or people feel this, or no. It means, that's alright, you add that in based on the Shastra. You see the Shastra, what it says. And then, in line with that, you can bring in these other points to try to establish something. But you can't start with them. Otherwise, then, the difficulty is, then it's not a descending process. You're not starting from the Shastra. You're starting from, you know, that's right, Shruti, Smriti, Purana. He's going down, right? Yes. That's the whole thing. Pancharatra, Vidivina. So you're bringing it down to the practical, how you're going to apply it. There are different grades of Vaishnavas. Kanista Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. But to be a Madhyama Adhikari preacher, one must be a learned scholar in the Vedanta Sutra and other Vedic literatures, because when Bhakti Yoga develops on the basis of Vedanta philosophy, it is factual and steady. Right? Because Vedanta is consistent. That's the thing. Is at all points, nothing is inconsistent with something else. You can connect everything. Any one point, and you can see is that on any point, on the micro, on the meso, on the macro, then it's always going to be consistent. It's being applied in a big way, it's being the middle way, in a small way, but it still has the same principle. That's the thing. The Vedanta are the principles on which it's all established. And from there, then you can get all the different variety of things. In this connection, we may quote the translation and purport of the verse mentioned above, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12. 1.2.12 translation. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Purport. So this is Srila Prabhupada quoting himself.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, then he's quoting his purport from Bhagavatam.
Yeah, first he quoted it. Is this one where he posted first the translation and then the
purport? Yes, purport, yes.
It surprised me too, because when I was writing it, I actually wrote it as another verse, because it wasn't numbered, but it said translation.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, they forgot to put a number, so I put like 49.5 or something like that. And then I realized, oh no, he's just quoting.
He's quoting from there. Yeah. So it's very far out. Purport. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord, Vasudeva, or the personality of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. Right? So that's the point, is whatever they're dealing with, if they only deal that much, it's only partial. So even here, even one's a monotheistic, but they're only seeing up to the Paramatma level. then the difficulty comes in the sense that Paramatma level is an intermediate level, right? Is that you're controlling the Brahman aspect, you know, the person is controlling the Brahman aspect. So you either have to go forward to Bhagavan or you'll go back to Brahman. And you see is that all these religious processes, they always go back to Brahman. Like that. Even the yoga, they come up to there, they meditate on the Lord, but then they go higher, they go back. You know what I'm saying? So that's the unique thing. Only the Vaishnavas talk about going forward. So that's it.
Without
bhakti you can't go forward, because that's the whole point. Is what? As God, he's interacting with you on however you're dealing with him in whatever form you see him as, either just as his energies or as the Brahman or Paramatma. But the point is his pastimes, that's based on devotion. So unless there's that aspect, you can't move forward to that. And you'll only gain that by association. Right? So associating with those from that platform, you can gain that platform. So the Acharyas come, they reveal that platform by that association. And by associating with those who are in pursuance of that, then we can appreciate and understand the personal platform and move forward to it. Otherwise, they won't. Wow, so many different kinds of mosquitoes. We have a variety of mosquitoes here. It's not even just one kind of mosquito. Yeah. You know, you have little dinky ones, and they have the big tiger ones. Have you seen the clear ones? Yeah, there's one kind that's transparent.
It's all the same.
That's there, but you know, it's like dogs. You know, there's all the different kinds of dogs and this and that. But they all slobber. They all bite. Yeah. As such, Brahman or Paramatma, realization of the absolute truth, is but a partial realization. So even though it's about God, it's only partial. That's why you'll see these problems come up, because they don't know what to do with that. So some will talk about the ultimate thing, and then they'll come back to something, or they'll go up to there, and they do different things. You know. That's why he's a person, but you know, what is it that he has no form? So they always will go back. So the Vedas are also saying he has no form, but that means no material form. Mm-hmm. But they don't understand that there's material and spiritual as such. For them, there's sin and there's piety. So it's all within the realm of the material world. So heaven is actually within the material confines. Right? And you know, if you get really, really enthusiastic, then heaven's going to descend down here rather than you have to go there. You know? So the whole point is that these different aspects of the philosophy are taken, but they're not understood, and so they get misapplied. And it means we, without the commentaries of the Acharyas, we can make mistakes. Can you imagine that you used to practice Vedic culture thousands of years ago? You know, like that? And it hasn't been practiced for that time? You know, how much deviation can be there. Like that. So, yeah.
So now, without the Acharya, it's only deviation?
Yes, without the Acharya, you'll automatically, because we'll see through our four defects. Yeah. So we'll see what makes sense to me. What, you know, if it makes sense to me, then it's real. If it doesn't make sense to me, it's not real. But it has to be as... Making sense can't be about my logic. Making sense means it's compared to what the Acharyas have said. Like that. That has to be the judge. Now, if we can't understand it, then someone else can explain it. Yes. But it's not based on the authority as my understanding. Right? That the rationalists and that will work on that principle. They don't understand it, it's not real. And according to Shankaracharya, that rationalist is not real either. So he doesn't exist. So then that solves that problem. Okay. There are four types of human beings. The karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first class transcendentalists are the devotees who have realized the Supreme Person. The second class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. And the third class transcendentalists are those who have barely realized the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. Right, so it's all connected with the person, but they're not seeing it that way. So they barely realize it. They've got some aspect of the Absolute, but they don't know about the person. The yogis know about the person, but it's only a partial understanding of the person. So therefore the devotees, it's first class because you actually understand the person. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge of detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realizations of the Absolute Truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, i.e. the paths of jnana and yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the Absolute Truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground, or full knowledge combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by dint of the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the Absolute Truth. Devotional service is not, therefore, meant for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. Right? So that means the third class transcendentalists won't understand the devotional side. The yogis will a little bit more. Like you see, that devotees can go to yoga studios and preach a bit there, and people will kind of appreciate and all that. But they're not going to the Mayavadi ashrams and preaching, because that being third class transcendentalists, they can't appreciate it. So the second will a little bit, so the first class will actually properly. So. Material devotees are more attached to material benefit than transcendental profit. Right? So that mixed position will slow them down. Right? These are situated within the first class transcendentalist, but they're the third class within the first class. That makes sense. A sincere devotee must, therefore, be prepared to hear the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and other literatures left by the previous authorities, or Goswamis, for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress, because you don't know how to understand things, how to interpret, how to apply. Right? Because we see is that that by that detachment of the material, and that, then you're able to appreciate the knowledge. With that, then you can apply yourself. Does that make sense? Then you can actually appreciate hearing and all that. Does that make sense? Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a sort of disturbance on the path of devotional service. Right, so you're hearing and then following. So like he's saying here, the Sahajis, they're not hearing, so therefore they're not following. So it's just a disturbance. Or if you hear and don't follow, then that will also be a problem, because then you don't have the proper realization. You'll get some understanding, you know, if it's devotional, but you won't have the realization. Right? Okay. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra authorities, the make-show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. Right, so, through hearing from a bona fide authority and bona fide sources, then one is able to recognize how the Lord is situated in the heart. Right? So, in a sense. So it's yeah.
Yes. Here Srila Prabhupada quite strongly refuses sentimental devotional service.
Yes. Means devotion naturally has emotion, but that doesn't mean it's sentiment. Does that make sense? So it's just like, let's say we're not accepting the philosophy, but we're just taking certain practices of devotional service. Then that will end up as sentimentality. Or if we don't accept the religion, just the philosophy, you know, but then that means it won't be complete either. So then either is the American, right? Either is American?
Either, yeah.
Either is either the British.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, sometimes you get stuck between, like, this is just, this is the first time I've noticed it too, like when you go to say aunt or aunt, then I get stuck there, which one to say, you know.
It's okay to say either, even American, you're even more educated.
But you can say aunt in American.
No,
or
either.
Either.
Instead of either?
Oh,
either.
You can say it.
Yeah, you can do it.
Okay. Okay. What about aunt?
You gotta say aunt.
They would say you're a bit affected or something. Yeah, okay. Okay. We were dealing with some questions. Then the lights went off. So is that an indication about the question? He asked the question, the light goes off. We get distracted by something else, the light comes on.
That light on this level, on higher level, like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it can be dealt with that sentiment, improper sentiment.
You can say there's proper emotion. It's not exactly sentiment. It means you can, in one sense, call it sentiment, but it's transcendental. So here is trying to make, it's like saying Krishna has no qualities. It means you're trying to avoid the material. So in this context, when we say sentiment, we're meaning the material sentiment. It's not based on Guru Sadhu and Shastra. It's just how I feel and this and that. And so it's nice. It may be in line with devotional service and all this, but because it doesn't actually, it's not based on the scriptures, there will be a weakness there. And you won't be able to tell the difference. Right? So in other words, someone by devotional service, they develop good qualities and they act accordingly. You won't be able to tell the difference between that and someone who's just sentiment and trying to be nice. So then the problem comes is then anybody who's nice, then we may take that as spiritual. You know, it's just like, let's say we're talking in the Abrahamic aspect. So then that someone should be, a nice person, a good Samaritan, or, you know, someone slaps you so you turn the other cheek, that kind of thing like that. That'll be because it's basically as if someone is in the proper consciousness, this will be the natural behavior. But we may take it that no, striving to behave like that is actually spiritual. We can't tell the difference. So the point is, someone's God conscious, then these things start to come very naturally. Right, and with as one advances more and more, they become very standard. But otherwise, it gets down to just being nice, just giving in charity, just doing that kind of stuff, and then we don't need religion. Right, just be nice. Just like Prabhupada points out, is that by dharma you get artha, but if we're getting money without dharma, then we're not going to bother with dharma. Right? So in the same way as people are being nice, the social system's going nice, they won't bother with the religious aspect. So there's a danger there because they're not discriminating. So because ultimately it's not based on scripture. You know what I'm saying? Their whole thing is just based on they like it, that's why they're doing it. Which is okay as in the beginning. That you come in contact with the devotees who like it and that. And so then from that position, then you should move forward by association. Then you'll hear about the philosophy, you'll learn the philosophy. So therefore, then you'll start to be able to see through Shastra Chakshus. Otherwise, then we'll tend to see according to our particular conditioning. You know, and when it's an area where we don't necessarily have an opinion, then they will use the Shastra, the philosophy, quite nicely. But in an area where I have a strong opinion, then I may fall back on my conditioning. And so then that would be sentiment. Right? But we see that it will be talked about, the sentiments of the devotees are not. They're talking about it's in connection with Krishna. In other words, from the rati, that attraction to Krishna, then these various anubhavas and that come up. Mm-hmm. And that taste. So that you could say is there are the sentiments.
Okay.
Oh, you get all the smoke going. But no mosquitoes.
Antagonists.
No mosquitoes. It's going to be something. You choose. Is it smoke or is it mosquitoes? Huh? The topic to be nice.
In the case of Arjuna, when he...
To be nice or to not be nice. This is the question.
What is to be nice? in the case of Arjuna, when he was confused...
Yes.
What to do? Should he punish Kauravas or not? He got the answer according to Manus Lidya, that his dharma to do...
Yes, because this is a war.
In our case, if, for example, leader of his school has same situation and he doesn't can't understand what is his proper duty, to be nice and to ignore some situation or to restrict someone who may be punished and not to be nice.
It means that's the only alternatives. To be nice means to ignore, and to notice means to not be nice.
To feel compassion to someone.
But you can't notice and be nice?
Today in morning I
can you punish and be, you know, how you say
nice.
Say, putting them in the stocks with a smile on your face. You know, you only throw cream pies at them, no cabbages.
This situation which I described in one, for example, some another.
No, but why can't you be means? Okay, someone's having some difficulty, and so either we, by ignoring it, then that would be considered nice, right? By means just by what's being
because
discussed
we
here.
We don't disturb him. We are nice.
Okay, we're nice. We don't disturb, so we kind of ignore it, or we notice it, and then we have to. Then we require hell, fire, and brimstone. You don't have those ones. I'm just saying, how does it go that far east?
It does.
They also have hell, fire, and brimstone. They also hell means fire and all that kind of stuff. Means you have heaven and hell, right? Oh, okay, no, but I'm just saying, in heaven, there's green couches and virgins and all that kind of stuff. And in hell, what's in hell? Fire. Okay, so then we're on the same page here. Okay. So, no, I was just trying to find out if the example I used works or not, because it could be, you know, it's not. Right, does that make sense? Okay. You know, it could be hell is, you know, having, you know, sitting in front of, you know, a Bengali bureaucrat and trying to get your paper signed or something like that. He's always drinking tea or something. So there's different concepts of hell. So. Sorry?
Bengali hell.
That's Bengali hell, yeah.
Regional there.
Oh, so you have regional areas like that. Yeah, he comes down. Okay, block 52. Yeah, Bengali. Yeah, okay, block 52. Yeah, Mr. Mukherjee's waiting for you. Block 52. Okay, so see, my meaning is that you can also see what's there, and if one has the ability, then try to, in somehow or another, influence them to get beyond this problem. So you're helping them through the problem, so in that way you can notice and help them through. It's not that if you notice, then you know you have to come in with, again, a problem. Torches and pitchforks.
Stones.
Stones, yeah. Does that make sense? So it's either, so nice means ignoring, and if we're going to notice, then we get out our bag of stones. Right? Is that? So what we're saying is you can be nice and try to take something through it. Just like, let's say, the children. They do something wrong. So is the alternative that we either ignore it and that it didn't exist, or we, you know, hang them upside down and beat the bottoms of their feet? No? You understand? So the point is why can't you notice, talk to them, try to make them understand, take them through it?
If it is the case with the children, you can explain because you are authority to them, but if you are not authority...
Well, if we're not authority, then it's not our problem.
It's not our problem.
No, if we're not the authority, it's not our problem. We can bring it up to the authority that they would know about it, but it's still their business. So all we do is deal, however, whatever is in our position like this. So like if we're not doing service with that devotee, we don't worry about it.
Is it our duty to tell something to authority?
It depends. If
someone complains me that this devotee do something wrong, should I tell the authority, or I should be? If I want to be.
No, you just tell them to tell the authority. Why get involved? It's there. They're worried about it. It's not that we don't care. It's a matter of that. We don't want to overemphasize the justice aspect because, as we said, as you're pointing out, that the general idea is either, oh, we just sweep it under the rug, or we, how you say, deal with it, come down like a ton of bricks. It's interesting. You start to notice how much of your, you know, some scars of how you use examples and everything. It works in a certain environment. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. In this case, someone's coming up, but this one's this and that one's that, and says, well, you go talk to the authorities. Oh, I'm too shy. Well, then be quiet. You know. Either don't worry about it and chant, or if you're worried, go tell someone. You know. But they're expecting to come tell you and you'll get it done. No, they should do their own work. That makes sense. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. Hearing this, the Mayavadi sannyasis became somewhat humble and addressed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Narayan himself, who they all agreed he was. Srila Prabhupada, Mayavadi sannyasis address each other as Narayana. Like that. Sometimes for fun, you see another ISKCON sannyasi and you go, Narayana, Narayana. Some of them laugh, some of them don't know what you're talking about, and some get really upset. That's why about it. Whenever they see another sannyasi, they offer him respect by calling him Om Namo Narayanaya. I offer my respect unto you, Narayana. Although they know perfectly well what kind of Narayana he is. That's so funny. So funny. Narayan has four hands, but although they are puffed up with the idea of being Narayana, they cannot exhibit more than two. Since their philosophy declares that Narayana and an ordinary human being are on the same level, they sometimes use the word Daridra Narayana, poor Narayana, which was invented by a so-called Swami who did not know anything about Vedanta philosophy. Yeah. Therefore, although all these Mayavadi sannyasis who called themselves Narayana were actually unaware of the position of Narayana, due to their austerities, Lord Chaitanya enabled them to understand him to be Narayana himself. So even though they were on a position not to understand, they hadn't done any devotional service, because of their austerities, then reciprocating on that platform, right? That they have studied very nicely. So they're scholarly. Doesn't mean that they actually have knowledge, but they're scholarly and very detached. And they've invited him and everything, and so they're dealing, you know, pleasantly. Mm-hmm. So then from this, then he's reciprocating. So that's the point. In this incarnation, he's most merciful. As Krishna, only how much they're surrendering, that much he'll reciprocate. You see, Lord Chaitanya, it's more like that, because he's taking the mood of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enabled them to understand her to be Narayan himself. Lord Chaitanya is certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, appearing as a devotee of Narayana. And thus the Mayavadi sannyasis, understanding that he was directly Narayana himself, whereas they were puffed up false Narayanas, spoke to him as follows. Because he comes in, he sits down, he's humble, he's all the character and all that. Plus, then the effulgence that he emits, they understand that only Narayana could do that. You know, because here's they're in Varanasi. So, you know, they're the most, you know, scholarly and you know, most, you know, sannyasi of sannyasis that you'll see around anywhere. Mm-hmm. And they don't manifest like this. So then here's a person who comes, and then, so they can understand there's something there. Because they're renounced, so they can kind of understand something in the realm of detachment and the aspect of liberation and that. Does that make sense? But they don't have a very clear understanding. Dear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they said, to tell you the truth, we are greatly pleased to hear your words, and furthermore, your bodily features are so pleasing that we feel extraordinary satisfaction in seeing you. Srila Prabhupada, in the Shastras it is said, Ata Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyahi Sevan Mukhe Hi Jihwadao Swayam Eva Spurat Yada. With one's materially contaminated senses, one cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or his name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia. But if one renders service unto him, the Lord reveals himself. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.34. Here one can see the effect of the Mayavadi sannyasi's service towards Narayana. Because the Mayavadis offered a little respect to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because they were pious and actually followed the austere rules and regulations of sannyas, they had some understanding of Vedanta philosophy. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they can appreciate that he was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is endowed with all six opulences. Remember, before it's mentioned, you have knowledge, there's detachment, and there's devotion. So they have knowledge, not necessarily of the supreme absolute truth, but they're studying Vedanta, they're performing their duties. They have detachment, right? So they're not just doing it for show. And they've rendered a little service to Lord Chaitanya. They've appreciated his beauty, they've appreciated his effulgence, they've appreciated his character, they've appreciated how well he spoke. And therefore, that reciprocation they're having of dealing nicely, then they're dealing in a devotional attitude. So that little bit there, then it all works nicely for them. One of these opulences is his beauty. By his extraordinary, beautiful bodily features, the Mayavadi sannyasis recognized Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Narayan himself. He was not a farcical Narayan like the Daridra Narayans invented by so-called sannyasis. Because he says that they don't even know Vedanta, because the ones that come up with the Daridra Narayan, they are generally worshippers of demigods. So they don't even know the Vedanta philosophy. So here is not this, and so-called sannyasis. They weren't even proper sannyasis and all that. I saw one picture. So I've seen the picture, but I think it's on what's all the way in the very south. And there's a little island there, and there's a deity there. She has a huge diamond. Kanyakumari. That at Kanyakumari, somewhere down there, there's a little like museum or something dedicated to this so-called sannyasi. Like that, unfortunately, but what to do. In there, there's a picture of when this so-called sannyasi went for this conference in Chicago. And in this picture, he's not in his regular sannyasi outfit. He's actually dressed up in, like, you know, the suit and tie and everything like that. You know, and this is back then, so he has, you know, the hair part in the middle, greased down and everything. And he's there looking, you know, quite good, you know. And the fun part is that while he's standing there for the picture, on each arm, he's got some girl. You know, it's not that he's just standing there for a picture. He actually has his arms around the two girls. And he's leaning forward, and it's all happening. Yeah. And they're quite proud of this, that he's gone and he's preaching to the Westerners, and yeah. So.
Young girls?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like. When was the time period of this?
1891.
Yeah, so it would have been that kind of. You know, they're you know, dressed in the that local dress and all that, but it's like for the parties, you know, that kind of thing. So you could see everyone was happy. Yes. Yes.
And the followers of Shankaracharya usually use Mundaka Upanishad to prove them that Brahman is supreme aspect of God. Does it mean that they read Mundaka Upanishad only partially, and they never read about what Chaitanya?
Yes, yes. Or they'll interpret it in their own way. So that's the point, is they'll only deal with those parts that agree with what they're saying. So they don't deal with everything. So it's just like we said, Shankaracharya's commentary in Vedanta Sutra, he doesn't deal with all the sutras. But the Vaishnava commentary does give a commentary on each sutra. So that's how it works. All the six schools do that. They only deal with that much. It means Vedanta and Karma and Mimamsa will deal with more. But, you know, they'll interpret it in their own way, but they'll only actually work with those ones that support. And then the other schools, they'll only actually deal with those shlokas that support. While for us, any verse is, because the conclusion of all the Vedic literature is about devotional service. So for us, no verse is the problem. You know, it may be more indirect, you know, it may be more secondary, but the point is, as Krishna is saying, in all times, all places, all circumstances, directly and indirectly, you should understand Him. That it's all about Him and His energies. So, the Mayavadi sannyasis continued, "Dear sir, by your influence, our minds are greatly satisfied, and we believe that your words will never be unreasonable. Therefore, you may speak on the Vedanta Sutra," right? Because they're from a superior school, you know. They're from, you know, from Kashi. And they're, you know, and naturally they'll consider themselves, you know, in all ways to be, you know, how you say, an authority. But here is that they're in dealing with Lord Chaitanya, they're so impressed, you know, that they've seen his dealings, they've seen his qualities and effulgence. So then they're saying as though how you're speaking, you won't be unreasonable. So they want to hear from him. So because he says, if you like, I'll speak, because they invited. You know, so he's being a proper guest. And so then there as the host is saying, yes, yes, please. Mm. Like that.
The Mayavadi sannyasis are all come from Brahminical background.
Yes, yes. Because as the Prabhupada was saying before, in the Shankara line, only Brahmins can take sannyas. If you're not born in a Brahmin family, you can't take sannyas. While for the Vaishnavs, then if you're acting as a Brahmin, you take sannyas. It doesn't matter the background. Yes.
Also, I went to this Vedic school. Even till date, they follow this norm that only Brahmin family people can come to study all the...
In the Gurukul.
In the Gurukul.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So they only have... Because, I mean, the traditional is Brahmin Kshatriyas and Vaishyas go to the Gurukul. They may stay for different lengths of time and have a different length of study. But the principle was is everyone would go. But here's this, it's only Brahmins. It's because you're born in a Brahmin family. It's not about your qualities. Like I remember seeing in one Gurukul, we were walking by. And I think at that time they had four Gurukuls. Now they only have one. But we were walking by in the Brahmin area, because there's certain streets that are for the Brahmins. And the Gurukul was in that street. But we went by, and all the kids were in this room. It was right on the road, you know, because it's just the neighborhood, the local neighborhood. and they were inside and at their desk and they were studying, but the teacher wasn't there, and it was like a grill because it's pleasant there, it's warm, but it was locked, so they had to stay inside to study. So it was interesting. So, you know, even though they're all from Brahmin families, they still had to lock the door.
Just in case.
Huh? Just in case. Just in case, yeah. Just in case.
Maharaj, I think it was maybe to keep you guys out.
That could have been. Could have been. But as we went by, all the kids, they, come to the window. What's going on?
They wanted to go to your house.
No, they didn't do that. Srila Prabhupada, in this verse, the words tomara prabhave, your influence is very important. Mm-hmm. Unless one is spiritually advanced, you cannot influence an audience. So that's the thing, is that means you're not going to get any more advanced than Lord Chaitanya. Like that, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he's the Supreme Devotee. So then, you know, it's not that Krishna himself can't influence, but he says he'll only reciprocate how you're dealing. So that's why then Advaitacharya called Lord Chaitanya. He's Vishnu, Advaitacharya, so he could easily have that influence, but his vow is as you surrender, he reciprocates. But for the devotee, they just go in and influence. So.
This is actually like very nice example how to preach in difficult situations. One has to be really think how to help those persons, even there, impersonally.
Yes. It's about how to do that and the culture. You can see is the culture, that how effective it is.
Yes.
That's the nice thing about the Chaitanya Charitamrita is we're going to see a lot of example of how the philosophy, the Vaishnava philosophy is applied in the Gaudiya line. The same examples will be there for everyone, but a lot of times you're establishing the main, that point of surrender, point of understanding, point of these kind of aspects are most of the examples. And in that you'll see the characters there. But in these Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see how much that character is being used. So that's why also he says here, unless one is spiritually advanced, he cannot influence an audience. So that's the principle that we see is as purity is the force. Like that. So that's why it's in that particular order. You change the order, you get a slightly different meaning. Yes.
Well, as an example, I think during Jiva Goswami's time on the... There was one devotee who was kind of a scholar and he wanted to go to Varanasi and preach to them. But his guru said, no, you don't go. But he disobeyed and he went.
Right.
He get influenced and he becomes a Mayavada.
Yes. Yeah, like that. Because you have to have that potency.
Yeah.
So we see here is that, you know, Lord Chaitanya, you're not going to get any more potency than this. So it works. But the principle is the same. Because you can say, oh, but I'm not Lord Chaitanya in that, but what opportunity are you invited by 10,000 Varanasi sannyasis to come and associate with them and discuss Vedanta philosophy in Sanskrit? Right? So you know, so therefore, yes, we're not saying you are Lord Chaitanya. We're just saying that guy down on the corner that you're selling the book to, that you can influence him.
You can say also that it is a duty of the audience to look for advanced spiritual devotees.
That's there also. If someone's sincere and all that, then they'll go and look. Like we're hearing today, Joy Dreta Maharaj's program, that all these God brothers and that, and just, you know, how they were looking for something and then, you know, they come across the devotees or that. They're looking for someone and someone invite them to the Sunday program. They don't know anything about it, and then one of their friends say, hey, you know, these guys are giving out free food, let's go. You know, and so then they go meet the devotees. And yeah, one of them was saying that he went to the program and all that, and after the program he was just sitting there, everyone else was left, and so then the devotees just said, you know, so why don't you just stay? And he did. Like that. So that was even quicker than Madhavisa's. You know, I always took it, he was one of the quickest. Now, this is even quicker. And there were a few that were like that. They go out. He just went in there and saw what it is. Okay, well, okay, great. You know, and then You know, and then, you know, hey, why don't you shave up? Okay, you know, and then the next day they send him out on Sankirtan, right? He's never read a book, never seen a book, doesn't even know what the book is about, but they hand him a book full of that and they take him out. You know? And he distributed them, and he's still distributing to this day, so it's like last 40 years. So it's pretty far out. So, you know, it's amazing just the influence of the devotees.
He was the number two book distributor on his first week.
yeah, that was far out. You know, like that. You know, he didn't know what was going on. He thought, "Well, I did okay." He was number two. You know, and that was. He started after 3 days in the movement. Yes.
Something about like justice seeking.
Justice seeking.
Not overemphasize justice seeking. You are okay. Mentioning. Today also, and the other day in Bhagavatam class also.
Justice seeking.
That mentality, and we should not confuse it with karma, because we cannot make proper.
No, the thing is, no, we shouldn't confuse it with devotion. Justice and karma, that's what goes together.
Well, my question is, Maharaj, it's there a lot, so is
it's there a lot.
How
yes.
To give up that?
It's not a matter of giving it up, it means what's actually just. If we want to look at it, how would you find what is the basis of justice?
Punishment.
Okay. Having a, you know, yeah. You know, that's what the town squares are for, right? You can come together, watch people get punished, you know, spend the afternoon, you know, bring a picnic lunch. You know, finish that knitting that hat you wanted to.
Free fire,
yeah. Yeah, you don't have to bring your own matches and stuff.
May not be like that mentality, like that feeling.
No, but what's the basis of justice?
Shastra, okay, someone is doing wrong, then justice has to be.
No, so, but what's wrong with doing something wrong? Why is doing something wrong bad?
Because Shastra is saying, and it is connected to Krishna.
But what's the Shastra's, what's the conclusion of the Shastra's connecting to Krishna? Shastras are connected to Krishna. So therefore, what are Shastras trying to get us to understand?
To surrender to Krishna.
Okay. And surrendering to Krishna, what are we going to do once we've surrendered?
Do whatever pleases Krishna.
And another word for that is called? Are there any?
Another word for that.
Yeah. Doing activities to please Krishna.
Yeah, it's like becoming a puppet.
Puppet.
Another word you said, sir.
It is another word. Okay. A puppet for who?
For Guru and Krishna.
For Guru and Krishna. And being a puppet for Guru and Krishna, is there any other terms that the Acharyas use to explain that situation? Or that activity?
Yeah, that's...
They call it puppet, being a puppet.
No, just told you to devotional service.
Oh, devotional, okay. Very good, yes, nice. Okay, so devotional service. Okay, so therefore, justice is then the principle of what is devotional service and what's not. Okay? Yes? And so, for the jiva, is it, what is their position? What's their, what, it means they're marginal, but what's the natural position of the jiva? Okay. So then, justice would mean seeing that somebody is properly engaged in service to Krishna. What has that got to do with punishment?
What I want to ask is that if you see
something. No, that's what you want to ask, but there's what we want you to understand.
Punishment, I'm not able to connect this.
Yes, because you don't need to connect it. Because what does punishment have to do with justice?
there is some connection. Justice is served through punishment. One of the ways.
Yes, but now you've just lost your whole connection. We went through this whole thing, and now you're just going back to zero again.
What I should do?
Try to understand what we said.
Yes.
Okay, let's look at the other end. Okay? So, according to scriptures, do this, don't do that. And if you do that, then you get punished, and if you do this, you get rewarded, right? You do pious activities, you get benefit. You do impious activities, you get punished. What's the purpose of the punishment?
To get purified, to do right.
To do right, okay. So the punishment is so that you'll do the proper activity. Okay? And this is just on the material platform of karma.
Yes.
Right? So now, but actually, what is karma meant for?
To purify.
To purify so that you can do what?
Devotional service.
Devotional service. Okay, quick learner. So, okay? So, that means then, unless if the punishment doesn't bring about commitment to devotional service, what's the point of the punishment other than it just makes mundane people happy on their mundane platform? Right? So that's why the sixth canto basically is going about saying, it opens up with Purikkat Maharaj saying that parischitta is absolutely useless. It doesn't benefit anybody. But when you, yes, like the elephant bath. But at the same time, is justice has to be defined. And so when you're working on the lower levels of mundanity, therefore, then it means in dharma, artha, and kama, because it's about performing your duty to get facility to have sense gratification. If someone's not following, it makes trouble for others who are trying that. So therefore, they should be punished. Right? I feel good if he's punished because I'm going through all the austerity, and so why is it I'm suffering and he's not suffering? Right? So you're going to suffer. So it's either suffer by following the rule or you suffer by not following the rule by being punished.
It's all material.
It's all material. So that's why you see is that on the level of liberation, they don't talk about punishment. Right? Do you hear any of the impersonalists talk about punishment? Never, because it's just a matter of you're giving all that up and just absorbing yourself in the absolute. Right? But at the same time, is they only know the lowest end of the absolute. Right? And so they don't know the highest, which is devotion. So therefore, piety is meant to bring you to the practices of devotional service. Not that it will, it's only by association of devotees. But having the association, then that pious platform makes it easier for you to do devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. That's why we don't worry about, we're not worried about retribution. And if devotees are worried about retribution, then they really don't understand what the process is. Retribution, punishment. Like that. So they don't understand actually what's the system for. Right? They're looking at it, you've done wrong, you have to be punished. But what's wrong? How do you define wrong? Wrong means, like you said, not according to scriptures. So why are scriptures recommending certain activities? Because those are the activities that are useful in bhakti. Right? The materialist doesn't want to do bhakti, but at least he can do the activities. He won't get the credit for bhakti. He'll only get the material benefits from it. But the point is now if a devotee comes along, so easily, it's just like this. You go to a typical Hindu house. Okay? In the Hindu house, they have an altar. Right? And on there they have pictures and this and that. Many times they have Tulsi Devi. They cook. They offer it to the altar. Like that. They get up in the morning early. They know about the Brahma Muhurta. They do some little study. They do some little japa. They go to the temple. They ring the bell. Say a few things. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So, like that. A guru comes to town, they'll go and appreciate or even invite sadhus over to their house. Right? So, like this. So now, if that person becomes a devotee, is he going to have problem getting up for Mangalarti?
Yes. may have less problems.
But if he's already up at that time every day?
No, then there is no issue.
Yeah, there's no issue. Does he have a problem that part of the sadhana is reading scriptures?
It's conducive for him, all these things.
Yeah, all these things, like that. Worship of guru, they have an altar, they do worship, they cook, they offer to the deity, they're vegetarians. So it's just so easy for them. So that's the whole point, is that the karma works because of the underlying element of bhakti. They have to be devotional to their karma to get an effect. They have to use the activities that they're doing in karma are actually the activities that are supportive of bhakti. Right? But they're not doing it with a devotional attitude, but they have to have some kind of devotion to their karma. So using the devotional activities with some devotion for karma, they get the results of their karma. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is that punishment is because then the alternative is vikarma, which is not useful in devotional service. So they're taking it about the benefits that they'll get. I do good work, I get good results. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. But the point is it's actually ultimately for devotional service. So if you understand it's about devotional service, then the point is these activities are meant to serve Krishna. So if someone's not performing them properly or is not performing them, then to educate them or train them or give association so that they do, that's the reformation. Punishment, what's it going to do? It doesn't work. It's Bhagavatam says one canto is explaining that. So why would someone think, oh no, we have to punish? Because what will it do other than make you feel better?
Like morning you gave example of meditation.
Yeah.
How Prabhupada dealt with.
Yeah, because otherwise there is no benefit. No one learns from it. Just like in the prison. I don't know about right now, what's the thing, I heard these were statistics from like 20 years ago. There's something like 98% of the people in prison felt that they were unfairly there.
It's still the same.
Yeah, they don't think they've really done anything wrong. You know, so the criminal mentality, even you punish, they're still criminals. That's the fourth class intelligence. Like fourth class, you do something wrong, you get punished, you still don't... Third class, you do something and it doesn't, then you understand. Second class, you see someone else, then you understand. First class, you hear about it, you understand. So this fourth class mentality, it doesn't work. So it doesn't work. It's not necessary for the process. But we're so used to it from karma, the process of karma, that we expect it. Because karma is one of the religious processes, so for us it's the only religious process, so therefore religion means there'll be, you know, heaven and hell and punishment. But actually it's just correcting, the real reformation means taking up devotional service. So stopping devotional service, how is that reformation? How will that, in any, you know, on which day of the week, and which year, and which planetary system will that produce devotion? You know, which universe, right? It's not, it just doesn't work. But still we're attached to it because of this sense of mundane justice. Real justice is, does it please Krishna? It pleases Krishna, that's right. It doesn't please Krishna, that's wrong. So what's the thing to do? Please Krishna. Does that make sense? This idea is, no, they've done something wrong, they have to be punished. No, they have to be shown how to please Krishna. That's our business. And if there's more necessity, material nature takes care of that, no problem. We don't have to worry about it. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Jaya Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nityai Gaura Premanande.